Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, we welcome a three-time Grammy-nominated pioneer of New Age music, multi-instrumentalist, and an accomplished guitarist, David Arkenstone. Tonight we speak with David about his writing, his arranging, and scoring, and his guitar playing, and how he uses it in his music. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. Buy some and tell them Flow Guitar sent you. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great one for you. We're lucky to have in studio a major influence on my work. And I'm really excited about it. We're going to go into depth, and I got some really interesting clips.
I appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you.
Well, Scott, after you said that and kind of stole the mustard there, what's going on with you?
Well, besides inspiring you,
inspire me,
long years of life. Actually, I just posted up three new videos from the LA Amp Show, which actually those are all the videos I have now. So that includes a Wampler Clarksdale Delta Drive demo, the Quilter Tone Block 200, and mm-hmm. the BC Audio Amp, and then along with that was the PRS Amp.
Very nice. 25-watt version of their PRS Archon. So it's got all the gain stage, and it's just like it goes down to like 13 watts, so you can crank and still not kill yourself.
Yeah, and then the other exciting thing was this weekend. I was telling you about it earlier, but went and saw a little piece of history today. My little daughter, she's only a year old, and she's seen two major history guitars. She's seen Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar, and now she's seen Gene Autry's very first ever produced D45 Martin guitar.
The first D45. That's cool.
Ordered in 1933.
But can she say D45?
No, she says Stevie Ray Vaughan's awesome, and Steve-Vai, he's pretty cool.
Oh, okay. I'm waiting for her to go, Martin.
Well, she's working on it.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good. So, yeah, check out those videos. They're pretty interesting. I was watching the Wampler one. It was pretty neat. They had some interesting stuff. That was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And the Tone Block one's pretty cool, too. That's just a little tiny little 200-watt amp that you can put on your pedal board. You know, and a lot of people use it to power other things like, what am I trying to think of here? Well, you could use it to power the Fractal. You could use it mm-hmm. to power the other modeling amp company, I think, Kemper. A lot of people use it for that, too. So it's a cool little amp.
That's great. That's great.
What have you been up to, Jeff?
I did some more stuff for the American Girls. More guitar stuff has come out. So using, again, a lot of my... I actually had a couple of the tunes I used that new Tele. I had a Tele built with a graphite neck and stainless steel frets. Pretty interesting guitar. It bends like butter. It's just like easy to pull those strings. And so I used that on there, and I had a special amp that's like a dumbbellized amp and with two 10s, but it has like the back end of it's like a super reverb. So it's like a super reverb with extra gain. And it came out really nice. They liked the tracks, and they've been using them a lot, so it was kind of cool. So I'll have more on that. You can check it out. If you go to www.thoseamericangirls.com, you can check it. They post the songs up, and they're pretty interesting. It's basically a lot of feedback and whammy bar stuff, but it's kind of fun to do. So it was a lot of fun. So check it out.
Now, in your Dumble amp, so I assume that's like an invitation to Alexander Dumble to just come in and bring one of his amps, right, and show whether his is better or not.
I don't know. It was. I don't know who exactly made it. It's been modified from what it was originally, but it was a copy of the Dumble circuit, supposedly. Okay, and then it has the gain stage and stuff, but we noticed that the power transformer was the same as a Super Reverb, and there's a switch on it where I can switch it, and it sounds like a Bandmaster. So it actually changes the characteristic of the tone. I use it mainly with the Super, and then they were going to put a 12 in it, but I found two Blueback Fender Blueback 10s. I'm like, well, if it's a Super, got to have 10s, right? And it gets the sound. It's really – it gets a nice bright sound for rhythm. And with Fender guitars, it's great. It's just it cuts really well. But the gain stage just gives – and the stuff I did with the American Girls is full-blown gain. And I can control the feedback. I was able to get, like, all these different harmonics and do, like, melodic feedback things with it. It was really nice. So – but anyway.
But can you do the real Dumble? Alexander, give us
I don't
a call.
Know. I've come never played show. A real Dumble. I can't afford one. It's more expensive than my house.
Alexander Dumble, come on the show. We want you on the show.
Yes, that's a challenge. Okay. We want you to... No, we just want to talk about amps. That's cool. Anyway, let's get on with it. We're going to go ahead to break, and we come back. We're going to be here with David Arkenstone. We got some interesting stuff. A new tune from him that's not released yet. We're going to talk about that. Some really great guitar playing here. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater, proud to support the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show. Check out our cool 24 months, no interest, equal payments financing. This is a killer deal exclusively through Sweetwater. Just go to sweetwater.com and click on the easy financing link in the lower right corner of every webpage. Or call us at 800-222-4700 to speak to professional guitar enthusiasts directly. This week, the Flow welcomes David Arkenstone. He's a super successful guitarist labeled as a new age guitarist, but for my money, he's really a great musician and composer. His music has been coined soundtracks for the imagination. What a great category that is. So check Jeff and Scott out as they hang with David on this week's show. And don't forget about our 24 months, no interest, equal payments financing at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle with Sweetwater saying, rock on with the Flow.
Hey, this is Brent Mason with Jeff and Scott, Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and enjoyed being on the show, and hopefully we'll get together again, and I'm going to go to bed. It's late. Thanks, guys.
I love that clip. That's just the best. I'm just going to go to bed. I'm tired. And he was great. He was pretty tired when we did the show. But anyway, I want to welcome David Arkenstone to the show. And to start off, I'm going to play a clip that kind of gives you an idea of how he and his albums. He's known a lot for these beautiful new age orchestrations. He's a multi-instrumentalist and influenced me a lot in keyboards. But he's an amazing guitar player, and there's a lot of guitar. As I went through all my albums, I found a lot of guitar stuff, and it's kind of interesting to see. And basically, I think you started primarily as a guitar player. So I'm going to play this opening clip, and it'll kind of set the mood of what we're going to be doing, and we're going to be talking about some amazing, amazing tunes and some amazing guitar playing. So here we go. Welcome, David. Welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
That song was called Along the Shoreline from his album Island. And, well, let's just get right into it. Do you remember what you were playing there? Because that's a great sound.
I'm pretty sure it was a J200, a Gibson J200. because I was doing that the first time. You know, listening to early music that you create really, I mean, I remember we were in this underground basement studio in Milwaukee, and I was working with Andrew White, who's an amazing guitarist, and this was my second record, so it was really important to get things right, but I was just flying by the seat of my pants. I mean, I started with some tunes, and then we just went in the studio and sort of created, you know, a lot of things in the studio, so we just, like that riff, the harmonic riff, I'd have to learn it, relearn it, but it was kind of fun, you know.
The sound, I mean, it's amazing. We were talking a little bit before the show. One of the things that amazes me is the fact that from album to album, you don't sound the same. You do change, and you're going to hear as we play some of these different clips, the guitars are totally different, and I don't think it's you're just necessarily using a different mic or a different preamp or something. I know that you said you go through a lot of different guitars. You like to experiment, but it's like, and it's interesting because it kind of works for what you're doing.
Right. I like to experiment, and I buy and get rid of guitars all the time. So for a while, I had a Charvel that I was using, and then I had a Stratocaster. I mean, I just use. try to use the best stuff, you know. And I'm always looking for, you know, tone. Mm-hmm. Of course.
No, it's really interesting how it, well, let's just go through some of the stuff. Since we're on Island, I'm going to play another tune that's really it's a beautiful piece. It's called Carnation Lily Lily Rose. Yeah. This is a really, and then we'll talk a little bit about that. But I want everybody to listen to. He layers a lot of guitars. He doubles, and then he does some stuff that kind of counterpoint to each other. This is a good example of that. Remember what you were using on that? I know it sounds like a 12 string.
Me and Andrew and I both played that together, so I'm sure I was still using my J200, and he did have a Martin. He had a couple Martins that he brought from Australia with him, and so it was just a wonderful sound. You know?
No, they complement each other well. Really,
he showed me how to do something where you get a bunch of the same note on different strings. I'd never really gotten that into that, but he was really more of a finger picker than I was, you know, so he had all these Michael Hedges sort of things that he had mastered, and so it was very educational for me.
Did he ever use like the Nashville tuning where he had a six string guitar with the upper strings of a 12 string where they would do it like it, you know, Simon Garfunkel used that a lot to do those weird inversions, and when you finger pick, it just changes the whole.
He used quite a few different tunings, and I couldn't keep up with it really.
Oh, okay.
He has another couple songs. There's a song on that album called Nullarbor that he did this beautiful part that we played together, but
yeah,
he had to show it to me.
Here, well, actually, since you mentioned that, I have the clip right here. Take a listen to this, and that's featuring him. Thank you. So that was you both playing together.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about... I mean, I'm sorry, this is just going to buzz me by listening to these albums from 20 years ago. when you sometimes collaborations just make you do things that you just would never normally do on your own. You know, Andrew was a great guitarist. We were very different. And so I can hear parts that he wrote. I can hear parts that I wrote. And we combined them, and it ended up being magical on a bunch of tunes. So,
well, the counterpoint between the two guitars, I think, really works well. And then you have that like double lead thing going on.
Yeah, and then I was there's a lot of hammering in that that riff, you know. So I was into that. I was way into that. So
so those runs that they're doing, that's you.
Yeah, some of that. It sounds really clean, but it wasn't easy to play.
So I'm noticing a pattern here. You seem to like the J200s because you've got one here with you.
I like the jumbos.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So what is it about those that you like? Is it the jumbo? Is it the maple? Is it the combination?
I think it's the power, and it just seems like the tone is more. It's not brittle or high endy. I like body. I like to feel it. You know, I play a chord. I like to feel it against my body. Acoustic guitar, right, of course. So I just like the jumbo, and my hands are big enough to where it makes sense. You know, some of the smaller guitars, I don't know, I don't feel as comfortable. And when I bang this, or I have a Guild 12 string, like from the early 70s, a big jumbo, and it's just like, dang. That thing rocks.
Things, yeah,
you don't have to double track anything with that.
No, that thing's full. That is a full guitar. The Guilds are really full.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention here that he has this J200. It's an Epiphone, and he bought it stock, and he bought it. He bought it online, and it's basically what it is. There's no modifications. He's got the standard pickup for it. The thing's all set up. Just strum a little bit of it so they can hear a little bit of this. Rich sound to it.
Now, on those Epiphones, they're solid tops, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I don't analyze them like I used to. I just like to hear. I bought this at Sweetwater, by the way.
You can get this guitar, the David Arkenstone model. No, I'm just kidding.
That'd be great.
It's a great. I mean,
guitars have come a long way. You know, I think so many people have become enthusiasts. Luthiers and there's a whole new generation of people that are making good guitars. You know, maybe in the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was still a new frontier, maybe, for some guitars. And I mean, you had several big names. Now there's a lot of great makers. You know,
there's some of the sounds are just they're so unique and beautiful. I mean, there's your Martin, your Gibson sound, but there's all these other custom ones that are just really interesting. Now, this guitar, it's got the pickup in it. This is a guitar you got specifically to play live, right?
Yeah, because it has built-in electronics and a tuner, and I just plug it in, and I know it's going to be there. It's going to sound the same every night in my monitor. Or my headset, whatever I'm using, and it's reliable. And there's so many other things to think about when you're playing live. It's just really nice to have some consistency.
Yeah. You know? Now, I also recommend you go ahead and check out www.davidarkenstone.com. And there's a video there of this new adventure, the Symphonic Adventure. And he's using a 12-string. It's a Carvin.
Carvin, yeah.
And is that acoustic, electric? Does that have an electric
picket? It is acoustic, electric. It's about half the size of this one, which is about 2 inches thick. And you can hear it when it's not plugged in, you know, a little bit. It's not designed for that necessarily. It's got quite a few knobs on it that give you a lot of different tones.
So it's not just switches. An acoustic 12-string sound. It can get like an electric 12-string.
Yeah.
So it has different pickups on it.
Step on my pedal and just play that guitar.
Yeah. No, I was listening to the video, which you'll hear him. It cuts to different. He's playing accordion for 1 second, then he goes to drums on another, and he's like going all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's a nice sound. It's a really really nice sound.
I like it.
So, but since we're talking about guitars and stuff, let's get a little bit into your background, what your influences and where you are coming from before, because you are one of the people I think were the first. In the new age music form. I mean, you basically one of the first I ever heard of the players. I know there were other guys around,
sure.
but you were one of the pioneers of it.
And there were, I think, pioneer wise, I was one of the people that combined a lot of different sounds. Like there were a lot of new age guys that just played guitar, like Will Ackerman, Michael Hedges, those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's guys who just played piano. That was their whole record was just solo piano. But that was never enough for me. I remember when I was like 2 or 3 years old, my dad had a guitar case probably the size of the one that holds this jumbo, mm-hmm. and I would slide up and down it. I'm like mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years old. It was a Gibson Synchromatic, mm-hmm. which did have some cool inlay, by the way, that ended up falling apart. But it had been in a little flood, so the back end of this was kind of funky. But that's the guitar I learned on, and my I remember going to my dad saying, oh, I wanted to learn how to play guitar when I was like, well, 11 or 12. And the Beatles came out, you know. 13,
so that was your
14.
First instrument?
Yeah. Well, no, I started by playing piano. Okay. I had lessons when I was from about 6 to 10, maybe 11. And then I got in guitar, and I didn't play piano as much. I just learned how to play guitar. But I remember my dad was, you know, a jazzer. He traveled around the country in the 40s. And he tried to show me some stuff, and it was way over my head. Like, I couldn't relate. And he wasn't really a teacher. He was playing, you know, like all these, you know, he just had a sense of melody, like Tal Farlow. I don't know. I'm sure you know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff. And I was like, you know, I just want to play, I want to hold your hand, really, or something. And so I took some guitar lessons. And then Jimi Hendrix came out, and I almost gave up. I mean, I thought, that's never going to be. You know, but I remember when Are You Experienced came out, and I was just learning bar chords, and they were so hard, but I just kept on, you know. I guess I love the instrument, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's an instrument that's just personal, you know. It's just you put your arms mm-hmm. around it. It's not like a keyboard, even a piano, which I love, but the guitar has something special to it. And then I started writing my own music. Yeah, it's got curves. And I started writing my own music with a friend of mine, you know, really basic stuff that, like, whatever we liked, mm-hmm. probably, as most people do. You start with something that you can relate to. And just went through different bands through high school and playing guitar, bass, and then I got a Hammond organ for my birthday, and then I started playing that for a while. And we had a great guitarist, so I didn't... Mm-hmm. I made him let me play guitar once in a while, but... I had to fight for it.
Now, the obviously the Beatles was a big influence, and obviously Hendrix was. But what other major artist influenced you that you consider critical to your getting to where you are?
I really liked Crosby, Stills, and Nash mm-hmm. a lot. I loved Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and Yes, and Gentle Giant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would go a little obscure.
I know. Scott's looking at us kind of quizzically.
Yeah, that's all right.
I've heard of them all.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Go on YouTube.
Yes.
Gentle Giant, to me, was sort of a musician's group. I mean, mm-hmm. they didn't care about commerciality at all, I don't think, because their music was just, you know, it was almost like early Genesis stuff was like that, where we're just going to do whatever we want. We don't care if anybody likes it, which is a great way to... make music, because that's how you discover things that haven't been done before.
Well, Gentle Giant to me was like the epitome of counterpoint. They would guess where one is. I mean, they knew they would do these really crazy rhythmical things,
sure.
and it worked.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool.
And they had good singing. There was a couple brothers in the band, so the harmony was awesome, mm-hmm. and we should just listen to that. And then so many bands, you know, I don't know. And I loved classical music a lot. So the music I was writing always had like a classical break. But probably one of my favorites was Deep Purple.
Oh, okay.
I loved everything. You know?
Yeah.
Richie, my first son's middle name is Blackmore. So that should tell you something.
That's cool. Well, since you're talking about, your progressive influences... And we have this clip that you gave me that's actually not out yet. This is a clip from a new song for you, To the King.
Right.
And it totally shows your whole prog influence. And it's a killer guitar track. I have to admit,
thanks.
I was blown away.
Thanks.
He had sent me this, and just to give the backstory, he said, play this. You know, I asked, I sent an email to David, you know, if there's any clips you want me to play. I'm going to pull stuff from my my collection of your music, but when we're just going to talk about guitars. And he said, this one I think will be kind of fun to play. So here it is. It's called To the King. That's a side of David Arkansas not too many people have heard in the recent years, because most of your stuff's real, I mean, you'll see, it's just beautiful stuff, but it's just, that's, you can hear the changing rhythms and the syncopation and stuff. When is that coming out? What album is it? Because I'm definitely going to get that.
Well, it's a new project that I'm sort of trying to get together, you know, that's sort of a, I call it classical, you know, collides with rock. Kind of is the tagline.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still working with a couple vocalists, because that's going to be a vocal song, actually. But it did remind me of Highway Star in the middle of the
thing. I caught that.
But
it'll be interesting. Actually, if you, I'm curious if you'll ever try that with your symphonic adventure tour.
You know, it might be something like we could fit that in.
That would be very cool.
Because
that just it's always cool to see an orchestra rock with you.
Yes,
too.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
But what were you using on that?
I had a Stratocaster, and I have a plug-in called Guitar Rig, which is...
That's Guitar Rig?
Yeah, it's Guitar Rig.
It scares me.
Through an amp. What is it?
The little Marshall?
I think it's my little Marshall. Yeah. It's a combination of the two sounds. But Guitar Rig is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I just have to say.
Go on his site. There's some photos, and there's a shot of him. There's a shot of all his a bunch of his guitars on these stands. And right next to it's this little mini Marshall micro stack. It's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, I love Ritchie Blackmore, and I don't know why. I mean, a lot of people do. You love him or hate him, I guess, if you know him personally.
Well, I remember seeing him. He was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw him many times. I actually met him one time. I was playing in a Top 40 band in Shreveport, and Rainbow came to town. We were playing that night, but I just wandered into the arena in the afternoon and watched them tune and go through sound check, and I was just, like, drooling, you know, just from the way he tuned his guitar.
Yeah.
It was cool. And just how pure it was, just a Stratocaster through two Marshall stacks.
Yeah.
You know, that was it.
Yeah, I saw him with Deep Purple.
Yeah,
and here in Long Beach, and that opening with Smoke on the Water, that little chord riff.
Yeah, and he just switched between pickups. That's all he did.
Yeah, he's pretty straightforward.
Beautiful tone.
But that song. I mean, the guitar playing is that. You know, that's very, I like it. You really do rock.
It took me a while, I'll tell you, to be honest. You know, it didn't just pop out like that. I mean, I had to think about where the solo was going and what I wanted to do, which good solos sometimes do, especially prog rock solos. They have a reason for them a little bit.
You got to map out those changes so that you can, especially those time signature changes that you did.
Yeah.
So that you hit them right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I had to practice a little. I mean, I don't play guitar like that every day, so I had to.
Now, let me ask you, because you're a lot of your music is heavy orchestra. You do orchestration. You basically compose and build this big palette of sounds.
Right.
And you do a lot of counterpoint. And you do in your writing, do you find yourself writing on the guitar, or do you basically write like an arranger does, standard, like from your piano roots? Do you just score it, or do you do a little bit of both, or what? How do you?
I do a little bit of both, mostly keyboards, but I can, like, if I come up to a part and I know that I'm going to have guitar on it, or I want that sound, I'll try to go to the guitar and do something interesting mm-hmm. instead of trying to write a guitar part on a keyboard. A lot of people don't play guitar, so they do these guitar parts, and they're even getting amazing, some of the sample guitar plugins you can get.
Yeah.
But I don't think I need those, so I'll just grab my guitar, and I'll just bang out a scratch track, you know, just to finish the song maybe. But I do, sometimes I start on guitar. I mean, mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things I found that was interesting, and I've talked to guitar players as arrangers, is their approach to arranging is different. And this is curious because you have the keyboard background.
Right.
And when I first started music, I started actually on accordion back in the day. So nice. It was a keyboard bass and it basic, and then I moved into guitar. But a lot of people that play guitar, when they arrange, especially for strings, they voice it differently than keyboard player. Do you find that your guitar roots helps that, or do you still think keyboard when you
No, I find that exact thing. Like for example, if you're going to do a low string part, you know, on the guitar, these are all right next to each other, string wise.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard to go. But on a keyboard, that's like, you know, a foot and a half.
Yeah, your hands.
So
are...
you're not, if you're just keyboard player, why would you do that? You know, unless you're trained mm-hmm. a little bit. But so if I wanted to play this on keyboard, I'd have to go over there. I go, oh, geez, I can barely do that with one hand. So it's an interesting approach that I've come upon more than once.
So
use the wideness and the range of the guitar to do a part that's not for guitar, or you want to double it or something, you know, which helps string arranging, because string arranging should be wide. It's not meant to be close together, because it just sounds like an organ when you do it like that. So I never liked that.
Well, I found it was interesting in writing for strings, where you would do a riff on the violins, and I would figure out the harmony as a guitar player. So like mm-hmm. if you're doing double leads, and that double lead sound in strings just sounds really cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know
yeah.
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, but it's interesting that the guitar influence is a major part of your orchestral sound. That to me, I've heard that from other players, that you can tell if they're a guitar player by how they orchestrate.
I think it expands your palette a little bit. You mm-hmm. know, when you have knowledge of more than one instrument.
Yeah. Now, let me play a clip from Another Star in the Sky. I want to go through Another Star in the Sky. I'm sorry, I can't talk. But I want to play a little bit of a song here that shows some of the other electric guitar. Now, this is years. We're going back a little bit. I think this is...
93 or 94.
93, 94. So I'm going to play this clip. It's called Canyon of the Moon. And take a listen to. Now, the guitars, just so you know, they're in the back. They're back more. They're not in your face, which I think is part of that style.
They're like a wall.
Yeah.
I like them too.
Now, what were you using back then? Do you remember?
I know exactly what I was using. It was my 345, Gibson 345,
uh-huh.
through a Rockman,
wow.
through this Marshall I had. I don't even know the name of it, the number, but it had 8 tens. And I'm not sure I've ever seen another one. Like, had an angled cabinet, one tall cabinet,
mm-hmm.
not as tall as a stack, smaller, big enough for the a regular head on
it. Was it a 50-watt head or a 100-watt?
A 50-watt head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a JTM. That was probably a JTM.
I wish I had it. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Still. What, that cabinet.
Yeah. I sold the cabinet on the road somewhere. Oh. I don't know why.
I feel...
Yeah, I know.
An emptiness in the force. No, anyway.
But I changed my whole sound at the time, though, because mm-hmm. I put a... Because I always travel with a Leslie. So I put two 12s in a Leslie, in the side of a Leslie wooden cabinet mm-hmm. with an attenuator I got from Radio Shack, because if I played my Marshall or my Hi-Watt through it, I could never hear the horns. You just hear the speakers. So I had to turn the speakers down, and then I could hear the horns make a nice blend. And that thing, for a solo, you just step on the fast horn.
Oh, the fast rotor.
Like,
oh,
awesome.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of of Leslie. But I'm trying to think of a specific song. Is there anything you've used on any on your albums that brings that out, or you just use that live?
Probably not. That was probably pre-album.
Pre-album?
Sound, yeah. That, I still had the Leslie, but it was sounded great in a club. I mean, it was just big.
No, I just throw it around.
Yeah, it was neat.
But, you know, nudge, nudge, you know, you should use a Leslie on something. I think that would be really cool to hear that. I'm going to play another cut from Another Star in the Sky. This one's classical guitar. And do you do your bass parts? Because this is a beautiful...
A lot of times. I'd have to hear the song to tell
you.
Okay,
let me...
Most of the time.
Let me find it here. Here it is. This is called Taken by the Wind.
Definitely did that.
So that's you on bass.
It sounded fretless.
Was it? It is fretless. Yeah. It was a carbon fretless.
It's a beautiful sound. Yeah. He a lot of the music that I was on his albums, he uses fretless a lot.
Well,
it's very tasty.
Had to practice a little bit to get back into fretless.
Now, what guitar are you using there? That's a classic.
That was a Yamaha. I mean, a Gibson Chet Atkins.
Oh
those are cool.
Yeah.
It has a nice sound. And it
did have a nice sound, yeah.
Also, too, I want to mention that, again, notice how he plays the bass against the guitar, the percussion against the guitar in the previous clip. All of that, it's like counterpoint, even though technically it's not melodic line against melodic line, but you're using different colors against each other, and they kind of complement, they kind of answer, go back and forth.
Right. I noticed in that how handy it is to be doing both, having one brain, because you know mm-hmm. you just lock in. I knew what the guitar part was because I played it the same every time. It wasn't like a improvised mm-hmm. so much, and so I knew what to do with the bass, and they just locked in a couple times, and that was pretty pleasing.
Yeah, no, it works really well. And this album is Another Star in the Sky. It's a great album. It's one of my favorites because he mixed it in surround. But it's a beautiful. It's got some really cool things going on. You got viola in there. You got a lot of instruments. And that's one of your trademarks. You do use a lot of orchestral color, whether it's guitars or other stringed instruments.
It's hard to beat that. You know, with so many years of a legacy, you know, there's people have been there before. Tonally, mm-hmm. so it's nice. That song was actually, I used to do that in my rock band when I was trying to get a record deal in the early 80s up and down Sunset Boulevard. We used to do that song.
Really?
Yeah, and that's one of the only survivors that I actually redid on a record.
You redid?
So, yeah.
Do you ever, you have to put up on your website the original rock version of that.
I have.
Just see
probably how coming from a cassette, though.
But that's okay, just to kind of see where it came from.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of interesting. Now, speaking of kind of a hip guitar thing, this is, I think this is from, this is from Island. It's called Desert Ride. This is a really cool guitar thing you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
that sound.
Yeah, no, no, it's really cool. It's interesting. And again, they're fretless, but it's just the way you throw things against each other and they kind of work. Now, what were you using
here? You have to experiment. Well, that was Island. I pretty much used the J200 for that whole album, I'm pretty sure. And then Andrew played. We played together.
So
in some
parts. That's both of you guys playing there. And then you did the bass?
Yeah. Another fretless.
There's a lot of fretless on.
I started on bass really because my friend. The reason was my friend could play bar chords before I could, so I became the bass player,
mm-hmm.
which was a drag.
Sometimes it was by default. I played.
But I love the bass too. I just love it. I mean, it's. I think it's a little underrated. Not so much anymore, maybe. But
well, the fretless bass is kind of a neat lead instrument. It's
really
a nice
great.
Sound, you know.
Yeah.
I agree. I think in a lot of the music, a lot of other stuff that's more keyboard based, you do use the fretless a lot, and it's really really pretty stuff. Now I'm going to play another. I found another electric guitar solo here.
Wow.
This one is kind of cool. I mean, I'm totally just picking your brain of all this stuff, trying to have you remember half of what you had done for because it's so much stuff. Okay, this one is. From Island 2, and let me see if I'm not seeing the name of it. Here it is. This is called Hindu Holiday. Interesting guitar solo. I will figure out where the Hindu part is, but it's pretty cool. You heard it here, pulling a harmonic on that guitar.
That's right.
That sounded like a stand-up bass there.
Yeah, I don't think it was.
What were you using there, guitar-wise?
Stratocaster.
And it was at that Marshall with the 8-10s?
Yeah.
It had that really
nice. It was up pretty loud, too. And back then, I had to fight with the record company because, you know, they're a new-age record company, Narada. And so anytime I pulled my guitar out, they were like, oh, God. You know.
Yeah, no, I remember.
Let's push it down a little bit. So normally that would have been... Like nowadays, it'd be way louder.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we played that song a lot live, so it was a solo that sort of evolved a
little
bit.
Well, later on, when you got like in another Star in the Sky, were you told to keep those electric guitars back, or did you?
Not necessarily. I think
that
just became more of a color of my
yeah.
choice. You know, like Canyon of the Moon was like it might have been three tracks altogether just to give it this wall. So they were still a little skittish of electric guitar on a new age album, I think. I was pushing that boundary.
Yeah.
Because I never thought of myself as a new age musician. I didn't even know what the hell that was, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
It was like, my records are, because of the alphabetical, my records were right next to Will Ackerman's. We have nothing in common, essentially.
Yeah.
He's a guitar player,
you would see,
acoustic guitar player.
You were pulling a lot of different styles and influences and basically just a... It was mellower than maybe it wasn't as edgy as some other rock stuff, but it was still the same type of stuff.
Right.
And then there were other people. There was like very mild jazz, very light jazz. Mm-hmm. And I remember out here, the Wave, the record,
of course.
That radio station, when it came out and just started playing all this different light jazz and all sorts of stuff. But they played a lot more than just, you know, I mean, there was a lot of different things coming out of there, and it was all blanketed as new age.
Yeah, and then they went sort of smooth jazz, and the new age kind of took a backseat a little bit.
Yeah, but I think the 90s. New age, one of the things was the really cool keyboard stuff in there at that time, because that was using those really lush pads and stuff.
Right.
And then they would do other stuff like guitar, like Hedges was... Probably one of the he was one of the early guys too with doing different mellower type of things on acoustic guitar, even though he got pretty aggressive sometimes.
Yeah,
too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, so
great sound too.
But now let's get a little bit into we only have a little bit of time left, but I want to go into a little bit of your orchestral how you orchestrate a little bit in terms of some of these instruments. I'm going to play a couple of clips. This one's from the Atlantis Symphonic Journey. But I'm going to focus on the string instruments, obviously, I mean, he does these beautiful, elaborate violin, you know, with full orchestra and horns. But I want to talk a little bit, because you're using some interesting exotic string instruments that I think a lot of guitarists would be interested in checking out. So this song is called Festival of the Goddess, and take a listen, and also listen to the counterpoint. He's doing a lot of rhythmical things, and then all these little instruments are coming through. Let's take a listen. Now, you're doing some pretty little interesting things with their plucked instruments. I mean, I can hear pizzicato in the back on the strings, but what were you using there?
I have two different bouzoukis. I have one that's a full-size one. It's four courses of two strings, for in case somebody doesn't know that. And then I have a short little one that's like an octave mandolin. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is, actually. And when you play that with guitar or with 12 string, usually with just single string, because otherwise it's just too, there's no definition. It's probably a combination of those three things getting that sound, you know, real.
So jangly, you have the bouzouki and the 12 string.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I noticed a bouzouki isn't as tinkly as the 12 string.
No, it's a little more hollow for some reason, because mm-hmm. it has a big bulb in the back. And, mm-hmm. and then that was my Guild 12 string.
The Guild.
Yeah. It's a jumbo.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great.
I still have that one.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Looking at a picture of it right now.
That sound is good. Now I'm going to play another clip. This is from Spirit of Olympia. It's called Night in the Village. Now this, there's no good. I don't think there's any guitar. Tell me if there is guitar. I'm hearing mandolin and koto in mm-hmm. here. So I want to ask how you did that. But let me go ahead and play the clip, and you can give us a little bit more on it now. There it is. Now, that was a mandolin, right?
Yeah, I think there is a guitar bass in there. I mean, a guitar pad, you know, just like this. Something
okay.
like that.
And now, was that a bass, a regular electric bass?
No, that was a sample bass.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
And then what about the koto?
Koto was real koto.
You played that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
But it was a lot of practice, you know, practicing the fat. And I think that was even delayed. Much harder on the, you know,
yeah,
the
no.
real thing.
I did a session years ago, and it was for a Chinese noodle commercial, and they needed a koto, and we didn't have one, so I had my banjo tuned it down and bent the strings to get the doink, you know, out of it, and it worked. They loved it.
Yeah.
But that koto is great.
The record company knew, the producer knew somebody that had one, and so it was like, we were doing that song, Night in the Village, was sort of like a... a suite of pieces as if you were in the Olympic Village, mm-hmm. as walking through, you know. So you'd hear this, you'd hear Japanese music, you'd hear Russian. There's a Russian section. You know, it was kind of interesting. But they brought that in, and it was like, oh, yeah, we could use this for the Japanese.
Was it hard to do?
It was really, really hard. No, it was really hard.
To get that?
Really hard.
Da, da, da,
yeah.
Da, da, da.
Yeah. I could do it on guitar. You know, it's not that bad. And I wrote it on guitar, and I was like, oh, well, this should be on code. And I was like, crap. This is hard. I probably did it in, you know, 2 bars, 4 bars, and then, okay, we got those 4 bars. I mean, really, this is mm-hmm. embarrassing, but I'm not
a player.
But that's... And I wanted the sound, you know, and the sample just didn't get it.
If you remember from your roots, from the Beatles and stuff, that's what they did.
Yeah.
They just said, oh, this is
so.
Cool. Let me try this. Yeah. All right. We'll put that in there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. And I just want to mention, everybody, go to www.davidarkenstone.com. What's coming up for you? You're going to be doing the Symphonic Adventure live.
Yeah.
And I recommend you guys take a look at that because he's playing with full orchestra, and that's always cool.
Yeah. That's always cool. And then I just released an album called Native Chill, mm-hmm. which is got some interesting things on it. And then at the beginning of the year, a song called Barcelona, album called Barcelona Nights is coming out, and that's pretty much nylon string and what you imagine it would be, you know.
Oh, okay.
Sort of chill.
Well, we
stuff.
Just touched this. I mean, there's so much more about you than we even, which means you're just going to have to come back.
It's not that hard to twist my arm.
Okay. No, we'll definitely have you back. Before I leave, we'll close with an ending piece. It's called The Southern Cross, and it's a beautiful – it's a lot of lush 12 strings in it. And, again, it shows – the reason I picked it is it does show even beyond just the guitar. It goes into this full-blown orchestration, which is really cool. And you really need to check that out because that's just as much as we've shown how integral the guitar work in your roots in guitar – your orchestration's the other half of it that you have to kind of take into account. So it's kind of cool. But anyway, cool. I just want to thank you really for coming in. It's really an honor to have you here.
And we want to thank Sweetwater, too.
Yes, yes. And this guitar, this J200 Epiphone, you can get the David Arkenstone model at Sweetwater's.
See, he even told us. It plays exactly like how we got it because Sweetwater sets it up. That's why.
Yep.
So it's ready to go.
Yeah. So anyway, everybody have a great weekend. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next week. And thank you again. And this is The Southern Cross.